Wake up with the news and information you can trust. Starting your day the right way with the Andy Griffin Show. This is News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU.
909 on KDXU. Good morning to you. Monday morning, the sun did come up today, and we're all feeling a little better about things after the events of this weekend. Hi, I'm Andy Griffin. Stockton Myers is with me as well this morning. We do have a guest coming on in about 20 minutes or so, but we thought it was appropriate. I thought it was appropriate. We talked a little bit about what happened Saturday.
Right.
Some very fortuitous things. Some say miracle that presidential candidate Donald Trump and former president was not killed. He was shot, but not seriously injured. Stockton has prepared a little bit of a report on the man who was killed in that. Not the shooter, but the man who was basically a hero, right?
Yes.
Who was killed helping protect his family. As this thing unfolded on Saturday, I've been through a few of these in my life, and those of you that are older than me maybe been through a few more than me. I was not born when Kennedy was assassinated. It was 3 years before I was born. I vividly remember Ronald Reagan being shot. I don't, you know, there were attempts made, I guess, on George W. Bush, on Barack Obama. Not attempt. They didn't get shots off, but there were people who were trying to get shots off and assassinate Bill Clinton, Barack Obama, George W. Bush. Didn't see any of those. Didn't really hear. I remember hearing kind of side stories, but because it never came down to shots being fired, it was not, it was not, I guess, brought to the forefront as much. And of course, we were in a different world back then as far as news and social media.
Right.
And those types of things. But I don't know if this is one of those you'll always remember where you were when you found out moments or not. But I do know that, honestly, when I first saw the video, I didn't know the extent of the injuries. This was breaking. This was happening, you know.
Yeah.
And I saw that he went down. He grabbed his head and went down. And at that point, you don't know how bad was he hit. Where did it hit him? I mean, obviously, he went down and didn't look like he went down as a mortal injury, but you never know.
Yeah.
You never know. And not maybe 20 seconds after that, I thought, oh, what about the people that were behind him?
Yeah.
And because I started, he got up and pumped his fist. And I thought, okay, he's okay. But, you know, if somebody's firing a high-powered rifle and there's people standing behind the presidential candidate, boy, that's just a scary situation. As well. So we'll talk a little bit about that right now and how it all unfolded. If you maybe hadn't really been following it that close, or maybe hadn't heard an assassin, a young guy, 20-year-old guy, not that far out of high school, crawled up on a roof. And about 100 to 150 yards away from where President Trump was holding a rally in Butler, Pennsylvania, and was able to get at least a couple of shots off at the president. And had the president, former president, not turned his head at the last second, Stockton, we might be looking at a completely different result.
Well, and Trump even said himself, I should be dead. Yeah. And it's just, that is so close. That is so, 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 so close to essentially causing anarchy beyond what we can imagine.
Mayhem, chaos, absolutely. Some big, big questions about it right now. And first of all, you know, you can say luck, you can say miracle, you can say whatever you want it was, but Trump did turn his head at the last second just as the shot was fired that grazed him in the ear. Had his head not turned at the last second, probably would have gone through the backside of his skull and killed him.
Yeah.
So, you know, you can attribute that to a miracle if you want, you know, or luck. And either way, Trump is okay. Thank goodness. Someone was killed. And like I said, we're going to talk about that in just a minute. But I have some questions about the security of this event.
Right.
Now, I don't know if you've seen it, Stockton. There were a couple of really good overhead.
I have seen it.
From,
I know what
from
you're talking
Google
about.
Earth, kind of the juxtaposition of where everything was. And it's like, okay, why wasn't that one? That was kind of the only building close enough for anybody to have done anything. Why wasn't it secured? Where was the security? Why didn't they make sure nobody was on the roof?
And not only that, but there are multiple videos of people actually pointing out that mm-hmm. there was someone on the roof with a firearm, or what looked to be a firearm.
Yeah.
People were shouting, or, you know, not necessarily, they're trying to inform police about the man in the elevated position, and they're not doing anything.
So supposedly a couple of sheriffs, not Secret Service agents, but actual policemen there in the area, saw him. There was no ladder. They didn't have ladder or anything. So the one guy got on the other guy's shoulder and he hoisted him up so he could see. When he got up where his head was above the roof line and tried to confront the guy, the shooter turned and aimed his rifle at the police officer, who then ducked, causing both police officers to tumble to the ground. And it was just seconds later that this guy then took his shots at President Trump. So I don't think it's appropriate at all to call the policemen cowards.
No, I don't think
somebody actually said, oh, they're cowards because they didn't stop him. Well,
no.
In this situation, I would say no. I mean, if someone pointed a gun at you, what are you supposed to do?
Yeah, exactly.
It wouldn't have done any good if that cop got caught, got shot, you know?
Yeah.
There was another report, one of the Secret Service snipers, the counter-sniper, said he knew for a few seconds, maybe as many as 3 minutes, about the guy on the roof and was not given permission to take the guy out.
Huh.
And this was posted on social media yesterday, but they didn't take it down. It was up for like 10 hours and still hadn't been taken down, which would kind of imply that it's probably true. He also apparently disobeyed orders and finally taking the shot. He's the guy that ended the sniper's life, the bad guy's life. And so there's a lot of questions out there right now. Was there not enough Secret Servicemen to clear the scene? Did somebody screw up in not checking that rooftop? You know, should there have been more done to stop this guy? We don't know.
Yeah, and that's why you're seeing a lot of stories right now in the aftermath of essentially reviewing the security detail and seeing what exactly went wrong and why wasn't protocol being followed, essentially, in protecting, or like, was protocol being followed too closely, according to what, you know, Secret Service officials are saying. But it's a very sensitive situation. Regardless, I think they could have prevented it.
And you go, well, what's the big deal? He's okay. Well,
no,
it was inches from not being okay.
And not only that, but someone did die and two others were wounded.
Right.
Fortunately, those two are in stable condition. But yeah, a family man lost his life.
Yeah. Let's go ahead right now and talk a little bit about that. I was really concerned, you know, after finding out Trump was okay. I'm like, man, those poor people were behind him, because the bullet grazed the former president's ear, but then kept going. And it seemed like to me, several other shots. So what happened to the people behind him? And I know you did a little research on,
yes,
on one man, a sad story.
So 50-year-old Corey Comparator, in his final moments, what he essentially did was, it wasn't about ducking for cover. It wasn't about any of that. What he was doing is he, by instinct, essentially went to cover his family. And in his daughter, Allison Comparator, wrote in social media, she said, quote, "He shielded my body from the bullet that came at us. He loved his family. He truly loved us enough to take a real bullet for us." Comparator was a fire chief for a volunteer fire department. He is, as I mentioned before, he's 50 years old. And Governor Shapiro of Pennsylvania called him a hero. They called him a family man. He attended church every Sunday. And he loved his country, and he loved his family more than anything. And it's clear, that's 100% clear. He chose in his final moments to protect his family, and I find that very admirable.
Yeah.
But it's still unbelievably tragic that we had to lose someone so precious. Regardless of who they are, it's just we lost a good one, and it's.
They called him a daughter dad, which,
yeah,
for those of you who are dads, or maybe those that aren't dads even know, when you're a dad of daughters, sometimes you have to let daughters do things to you, like put makeup on you or mess with your hair or things like that.
Yeah.
And, you know, you just have to, you know, let it be because you're a dad and you love your kids and you want them to be happy. And it sounds like he was every bit a daughter daddy.
Yeah, exactly. And Governor Shapiro, when he did the press conference announcing just the damages essentially that came from this awful, awful attempt on former President Trump's life, it's just, you can tell that they were just so mournful for just not only for Comparator, but also the two others who were wounded in the shooting.
And their names haven't been released yet, right?
No, they have. They have been released. Okay. I have them right here. 57-year-old David Dutch of New Kensington, Pennsylvania, and James Coppenhaver, 74 years old, of Moon, Pennsylvania.
Okay.
And so the good news is that they're reportedly in stable condition.
Oh, that's good.
But it's still, the fact that this happened at all is just unbelievably awful. I can't even imagine 50 years old. And I mean, I think of my dad, you know, my dad just barely retired. And I think, would my dad do that for me? And I don't even think it for a second. Yeah, he would.
Yeah.
And if I had kids, I would do that for my kids. So I relate to him on that front. It's so sad.
There is, by the way, some breaking news, not necessarily exactly on this topic, but a couple of things are happening right now. First of all, that the case in Florida has been dismissed.
Yes, the handling of classified documents.
Yeah, the special prosecutor appointed a special investigator. It turned out she was having a relationship with this. Anyway, the judge threw the whole thing out. He said, no, this whole thing's improper. That's not right.
Yeah.
And then I just saw moments ago Donald Trump announced. Now, the Republican National Convention is this week. It runs through Thursday in Milwaukee.
Oh, did he announce his running mate?
He announced he's going to name his running mate today.
Okay.
He's going to name him today. Now, he already has commitments from over 2,000 delegates, which is more than double what he needs to get the nomination. So he is going to get the nomination. But this will be very fascinating. On the schedule to speak today is the potential vice president, whoever that might be.
Oh, wow. So
we don't know who it is.
It just says potential vice president.
Yeah.
Wow. That is interesting.
So who are the leading candidates? Well, Marco Rubio of Florida is one of them. J.D. Vance of Ohio is another. And Doug Burgum is another one of those. And we heard Jimmy Kesson say this morning he thinks Ron DeSantis might be in the mix. He's like, nobody's talking about DeSantis, the governor of Florida, but he would make a good one. So we'll wait and see on that.
I mean, Trump and DeSantis live in the same state, so.
Yeah, well, the same with Rubio. So they would have to address that.
Yeah.
You cannot have a president and a vice president from the same state.
Oh, I didn't know that.
That is actually against the rules. So the thing about that is Donald Trump has multiple residences.
Yes, he has one in New York. He has one in Florida. I think he has one in California.
Yeah, so he could, you know, depending on how long he's owned those places, if you own multiple residences, you could say, I'm actually a New York resident.
So it just depends on actually where his citizenship is registered as, essentially.
Yeah, exactly.
Gotcha.
So look forward to that. I know there are some folks from right here in St. George who are at the Republican National Convention, including Larry Myers, longtime listener of this program. Larry Myers is out there. I'm hoping to get a hold of Larry and have him give us a little live report from out there at some point this week. We'll see.
Cool.
He's a pretty busy guy, and it's a pretty busy thing that he's involved with. But we'd like to hear from him certainly later on this week. But a lot of people said, you know, is this whole thing that happened at the Trump rally, the shooting, is it political? There are conspiracy theories all over the place.
And that's inevitable. That's inevitable.
Yeah. And I kind of feel like, now my dad was telling me about when Kennedy was assassinated.
Right.
I was talking with him last night and he said, oh, you should have heard all the conspiracy theories right after it happened.
I mean, there's so many case studies on that.
And they even made a movie, JFK,
yes, they did.
Right?
Yes,
And nothing has been proven. I mean, that's not to say there isn't a conspiracy. for JFK, but nothing has been proved. They've never found anything, any damning evidence to say there was.
Right.
In the case yesterday, they are scouring everything they can with this guy. And I'm purposely not saying the name of the shooter, by the way, because right. I don't think we need to glorify this guy.
No.
So far they have not found any connection to anything with him.
One of the things that I think is really interesting about this is they spoke with some of this 20-year-old man's former classmates and mm-hmm. stuff like that. And a lot of what they said didn't describe anything that would, you know, point yeah. towards this kind of behavior. They just called him kind of a loner, but they also called him very nice.
Didn't it sound a little bit like what they say about school shooters? Oh, he's just a loner. He was picked on.
Kind of, yeah.
A little bit. And I was like, hmm.
But, and I know they're trying to get into his, I know the big thing right now is they're trying to get into his phone.
They haven't gotten into his phone yet.
Yeah, and so.
Apple, and I guess it was an iPhone, has, in previous cases, I don't know about this one, has said we will not. We will not do that. We will not help you hack into the phone.
I don't think they have a choice in the matter anymore. Because, I mean, we are on international levels of importance here. So, I mean, in my opinion, I think that Apple should absolutely assist in the investigation in this case. I have the feeling that they'll get into the phone sooner or later and then we'll, I don't know. Oh man, I don't know. Because he may have never actually, like, talked to anyone about it. He may have just decided to do this on a whim.
Yeah.
Which is just so scary to think about. In the end, nothing, absolutely nothing is concrete right now. We know hardly anything about the guy, which is kind of crazy, other than his name and all that stuff.
I want to clear a couple of things up. Number one, Donald Trump did not go golfing this morning or yesterday morning.
I saw
two or three posts out there saying, yeah, shot one day on the golf course. The next. No, he did not. That is actually not true.
He's not at the golf course at all right now. He's currently at the Republican convention.
Correct. He was not seriously injured. And the reason that he got up, kind of did the fist pumps and everything,
was to show everyone he's all right.
He wanted to make sure everybody knew he was okay. That Trump trying to become president of the United States for a second time is not, it's not dead, it's not, it's something, it's a dream. He's not giving up. He's going to fight to the very end.
And you'll notice when he gets up and he pumps his fist up, he actually says fight.
Fight, fight, fight.
Fight.
Three times.
Yep.
Yeah. I love that. I think we need more of that in America. It's a couple of other things. A staffer for a Democratic congressman did, in fact, write something, post something on social media that said, hey, shooter, take lessons so you don't miss next time.
I don't care what side you're on. You do not. That is a person. That is a person's life.
That staffer has been fired, according to the congressman. But still, you wonder if they're. Oh, and by the way, the other thing, CNN has a show called Morning Joe, very anti-Trump, a Trump hater show on CNN called Morning Joe. They pulled their show today.
That's what I heard.
Producers said there will be no morning show today. And when asked why, a person who asked to remain anonymous said, well, we felt like with that show and with the guest schedule they had to be on that someone might say something inappropriate. Therefore, we couldn't take that chance.
Yeah, you are now.
Wow.
Well, and that's something that I'm finding very interesting right now is that, I mean, both Trump and Biden have both said just how they're going to focus on unity from here on out. And, it sounds like to me that we're not going to be seeing as many, like, threats between the two as much. I mean, maybe we will. I don't know. But
yeah, it seems like, I don't know. A lot of the talk has been what they're calling lowering the temperature of the heat that is the political.
Which it has been kind of a boiling hot for like years. Yeah. So,
by the way, and one last thing on this before we take a break and bring in our guest, read Melania Trump's letter if you haven't read it. Melania Trump is first class. She's the first lady. Well, was the first lady, and hopefully will be the first lady again. Her letter oozes class and dignity and positivity in wake of what happened. If you haven't seen it, it's out there. It's easy to find. I've read it twice already now on social media, and I've seen it posted probably 10 times. But if you haven't had an opportunity to go out and read the letter, I think also, too, Stockton, read the letter from the family of the man that was killed. What, tell me his name again.
Corey Comparator.
Comparator, yeah. Read the letter from his family. That man died a hero.
Yeah.
He died a hero, tried to save his family, and he did save his family. Amazing stuff. All right, we're going to take a weather break. When we come back, Eva Fry will join me live on the air here on the Andy Griffin Show.
Wake up with the news and information you can trust. This is the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's news talk leader.
Hey, good morning, 934 on KDXU. Such a serious show, and it should be with what happened this weekend. But do want to lighten things up here for a few minutes. Eva Fry is with me. Hi, Eva. How are you?
I'm doing great, Andy. Thank you.
Now, I found out just now Eva has a radio connection. Your son is?
Kevin Fry.
Kevin Fry, who runs radio and has been on the radio and just a friend of the show. I've actually been on his show, and we're trying to think of the name of his show. And between the two of us, we're like, I can't remember. Stockton, you don't remember Kevin Fry's show over there at the college? No, he didn't. Stockton doesn't remember either. So, yeah. It has something to do. It's like a... Basically, they interview people and have them talk about their lives and what they do and everything. But the concept is at the beginning of the show, they try to get people to sing.
Yes.
And so it has kind of a karaoke element to it. And they actually got me to sing. I'm not going to do it now. But I sang one verse of Baby Blue by George Strait on his show. And you mentioned Kevin has a way of getting people to...
People to do things.
I don't know how he does that because I'm not a singer. But he did it. So I met Eva. Was it last Saturday? Two Saturdays ago.
Yeah.
Eva is a comedian. That's one of her many titles. One of many hats you wear, right, Eva?
At age 85, a whole lot.
85 years.
Do we have time?
Eva is spent the last, before coming here, you were in San Diego, right?
Yeah.
I love San Diego, beautiful place. My wife and I, last time we went out there, stayed on Coronado Island for a few days, and it was phenomenal. It was awesome. But yeah. How long have you been in Southern Utah now?
We've been here, I think, 14 years now.
14 years.
Yeah, okay. We were in San Diego for 26.
All right. Well, glad you're here.
Thank you.
Tell me about the experience. Let's talk about you, first of all. Before I was going to say, talk about the comedy a little bit. But at 80, you're really 85?
Well, on September the 11th, everyone remembers my birthday.
Really?
I'll be 85. Okay.
That's phenomenal. 85. You don't look 85. You look.
Have you got your glasses on?
You look 65 to me. So you look fantastic. At 85, it would be very easy, Eva, for you to go, I had a good life. I'm just going to chill and do nothing.
Yeah.
Right? That would be easy, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it would be really easy.
So why don't you do that?
That's boring.
I like your answer. That's boring. The heck with that. Yeah. So instead, you are teaching over at ICL, the Institute of Continued Learning, and you're getting up on stage and delivering comedy routines.
Yes.
That's phenomenal.
It's fun.
It's fun. It is fun. Well, I mean, we had a good time listening to you. You made me laugh. I'm not going to lie. I enjoyed your set. Did a fantastic job. So... Tell me about your life leading up to this point, because 85 years is a long time. Let's go back to young Eva in the 20s and 30s, your 20s and 30s. What were you doing back then?
I was born in 1939.
Okay. You know, right as World War I was getting going.
I was a war baby.
Or two, excuse me.
My parents took one look at me and started fighting.
Yeah?
Yeah. That one went over well.
I'm sorry. Like you, I'm a little bit out of hearing, so yeah. I didn't catch all of it. But.
I was born up in Calgary, Alberta, Canada.
Okay. So are you a Canadian citizen?
Yes.
Are you?
Well,
wow.
We're U.S. citizens as well.
Okay.
We have two of
dual citizenship. I like that. I love Calgary. I got to go there in 82, I think, and with the marching band I was in, and we performed at the Calgary Stampede Parade.
Oh, the Calgary Stampede. I grew up at the Calgary Stampede. I love it.
I remember we bought a bunch of rolls of nickels, and we sat on the back row of the Stampede Chuck Wagon races and bet on the Chuck Wagons to who would win. We were betting nickels. I mean, it was, maybe I'm in trouble.
It was very exciting.
But I love Calgary. Banff ice fields up there, and just a beautiful area.
Yeah, it's pretty when it's not freezing.
So when did you immigrate to the United States?
We came down to the United States in 1980.
Okay. All right. That's when I moved from Texas to Utah.
Oh, is that?
Where did you move to when you
We moved to Orem. Starting out, we started at stayed there 3 years before we went to San Diego. Yeah, we came down. We've kind of followed our kids wherever they go. They were going to BYU, so we kind of came down to the state, to Utah.
Nice. Yeah. Very nice. At this point, you're a mom. How many kids did you have, Eva?
We have three.
Three kids. Yeah, okay.
We have nine grandchildren and four great grandchildren.
Four greats. That is awesome.
Kids are bigger all the time.
Yeah, that is so cool. Okay, so you're in Orem and you're a mom and you're raising your kids and they're starting college. And at what point did you start going, okay, I want to be more than just a mom? Not that there's anything wrong with being a mom. That's fantastic. But what else?
Well, when I was young, that was my greatest goal, to be married, have a happy marriage, and to be a mom. Mm-hmm. And I did that, and I've raised really good children. But, you know, people my age, halfway through their life, they realize the kids are growing, and now what do you do?
Now what do I do? Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And I think I'm like most people. Not everyone plans the future. You kind of think this is your life, and that's going to be forever, but it doesn't. And so one day I woke up, no kids at home, and I realized, what the heck am I going to do with my life? And I had to really sit down and think of what I should do from here on.
So what did you, at that point, what did you decide? What were you interested in? What were you headed for?
Well, you know, I've written a book, You Must Have a Dream.
Yeah, right here.
And that kind of tells the story, but I realized that I had to realize.
Picture?
Yeah, that was, 22 years ago.
Okay.
But I had to realize that I needed to plan my future. I needed to do something. So I thought, I'm going to sit down and think of what things that I always wanted to do in my life and never got a chance. And so that's what I did. And I realized that when I was young, I used to always think of being an entertainer. To me, that was exciting. I would sing and do every silly things when I was young. But
do you sing now, by the way?
Well, you know, I did. I became a songwriter. I did a whole lot of things, but I'm almost deaf now.
Okay.
I have no hearing in the left ear, and I have 30% in my right ear.
Wow.
So I can't hear the music, so I can't sing.
Yeah.
And that's kind of why I've gone into comedy full time, because I only need a one-way conversation.
Yeah, you can just tell us and we can laugh.
Yeah.
Except you can't hear us laugh sometimes, I guess. Huh?
But when I sat down and decided what I needed to do, I thought I need to think about these things. And I thought, if I ever want to be able to be on a stage, I need to get over my fear. I was the shyest person in the world. So I took a speech class at the university where we lived and ended up being asked to be on the speech team. And I'm in my 50s, and I got to travel the United States.
So there's all these 20-year-olds
with all these kids. They kept me young. But I got to travel all over the United States with them and won a national speaking award. I had no clue that I could do that.
Well, that's amazing.
Yeah.
That's
so incredible. This is the thing. When you try things, doors open and you start realizing things about yourself you didn't know before. And that's what's happened to me. A lot of doors have opened.
So how did you get over, because I think everybody has these little fears, right?
Yeah.
For you, it was public speaking. For me, I can speak in public all day long, but if you ask me to sing in public, not as much. So how did you, what was the key for you? How did you get over it?
Do you know what? You have to try. You might be a good singer, but you don't know.
I guess, you know, the fear, oh, I'll be embarrassed. I'll say something stupid. I'll do something stupid,
that's
right?
That's really true. But you've got to overcome those fears. I mean, the reality is you've got to have such a drive inside of you that you want to do something, and you're going to do whatever it takes to do it so you can get, and you're going to have to suffer. I've had to suffer a lot. When I finally got my confidence to get in front of people, you know, then I wanted to be able to sing. Then I learned songs from the 30s and 40s and sang at senior places.
Yeah.
The first time I did that, the old people there got up halfway through after lunch and went to the room. I mean,
I could write
a book about all the things that have happened with me trying and having to go through stuff.
I guess you have to not be afraid to fail, right? I mean, because you're never going to be exactly what someone wants every time.
That's right. If you're motivated and want something so bad, you're going to be able to overcome the negative things, too.
How do the books factor in? You said you have this book, which I'm holding, You Must Have a Dream. But you said you have two more books. So when did you decide to write?
Well, the reality is, when I learned that I could get up in front of people, I wanted to continue speaking. So I started speaking for Mothers Against Drunk Driving.
Okay, mad, yeah.
And then they told me I couldn't tell kids that they can't drink. You can just drink at 21. I said, I'm not telling them that. And I went there. I saw those kids that were locked up. And I looked at them and I thought, they don't look any different than my grandkids. I need to come back. So I started my own program called Be a Winner in Life, and I talked to those kids. And that was when I wrote my second book, Be a Winner in Life.
Okay.
And then the third book was Letters from Juvenile Hall, Kids Helping Kids. And so I asked those kids. I mean, they were kids from the gangs, were kids that were murderers, did bad, bad things. I said, how would you like to do something good? Write me letters that I can share with the younger kids so they don't end up where you are.
Hmm.
And so that's what my Letters from Juvenile is, kids helping kids. So it's got all these letters from these kids trying to help other kids. So that was inspiring.
Was that well received, these kids who screwed up and did something really, really bad in their life?
Yeah, really, really. I've got a lot of stories of kids that I worked with there that, you know, some of them are going to prison, but it changed their personal lives, you know, yeah.
All right, I'm going to sneak a commercial break in. When we come back, we're going to talk about Eva and her desire to get to be a stand-up comedian and how she maybe could inspire you to do something like that. Is that okay? All right, we'll be right back.
All the latest news, weather, traffic, and sports, just like you like them. You're waking up with the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's news talk leader.
Welcome back, 948 on KDXU. Hope you got to catch some of our talk about the assassination attempt of President Trump earlier in the program. And again, I will refer you to Melania Trump's letter, to just kind of a press release letter. Very well written and very eloquent. And so if you get a chance, give that a read. I've got Eva Fry with me right now on the air. And Eva is Kevin's mom, right?
Yes.
Kevin is a local celebrity. I think he does, is it Senior Sampler, right? Is his
he's going to hate me. Senior Saver.
Senior Saver, that's it. Sorry, Senior Saver, yeah. So thank you, Kevin, for putting that thing together, and a great, great way to save money, for sure. He also, I don't know if he still does he do a radio show still, or is that over now?
Not at the moment. He does a podcast.
He does a podcast. Okay, cool. Eva, I met two Thursdays ago. She was one of the contestants on St. George Star Search. Eva got up and delivered about a 3-minute or 3 or 4 minute set of stand-up comedy. And at the age of 85, everybody's like, wait a minute, she did what? Yeah, she delivered a set of comedy at the age of 85. How was that?
It was fun. It's always fun.
Yeah?
It's fun when they laugh.
Yeah. Well, there was plenty of laughs. You did a fantastic job. You also teach a class, right, about stand-up comedy?
Yeah. Through ICL, Institute for Continuing Learning, I teach a class on how to become a clean stand-up comedian.
Clean. We like that word, clean. Yeah. I guess I got first thing I got to ask is, look, you're 85 years old. Why in the world would you want to do stand-up comedy?
I like to laugh. I like to make other people laugh. And what else would I do? Just stay being old.
Yeah, you could stay at home, I guess, and eat biscuits. And no, you're out there doing things. And you said that the fact that, unfortunately, your hearing is not as good as it used to be has kind of prompted you to get out of music and into stand-up comedy. How long have you been doing stand-up?
You know, when I was young, I always thought it was fun, you know, but when I was about 50, I took the stand-up comedy class, but I never really got to use it much. But I learned, and anyone that wants to do comedy, start writing funny things down. Okay. You know, start a comedy, you know, file. And so that's what I did. And then as time went on, I started doing my own shows because I wrote music. And I would always tell jokes in between, you know. Nice. And so that was fun. But when I lost my hearing, I couldn't sing. And then I decided, I guess I'll just try comedy full-time, and that's what I've done.
So admirable, so cool. We have on staff here, Dave Hyatt is a stand-up comedian as well.
Oh, yeah.
And I've been trying to get Dave to come over on my show, but he's also usually on the radio on one of our other stations at the same time, so I haven't been able to get him. But it fascinates me that people... So when I was in college, this was at BYU when I was a freshman in college, I took the... And you know, at BYU, they have these big, giant lecture halls, right?
Yeah.
And I became friends with this girl, we'd sit in this class, and I think it was like, you know, biology 110 or geology 115. It was a freshman level class. And she sat in this class and wrote jokes the whole time because she didn't want to, you know, she didn't care about geology or about whatever the class was. She cared about doing stand up routines and open mic nights and getting up there and trying to make people laugh. And, one of the jokes was about ducks. I remember that, and I can't repeat it here because it's not as clean as your comedy. I just was like, that is so strange. That was my first exposure to anyone who was a comedian. But I remember expressing to her, and I'll tell you the same thing, it takes a tremendous amount of courage to put yourself out there as a comedian, because if you get up there and you tell a couple jokes and nobody laughs, you're tremendously vulnerable.
It's not nice. Or if you stand up and forget your joke, that's not nice.
Oh, yeah, that's true, too. I think a lot of young comedians will actually take their note cards with them, right? Yeah, so they don't forget. And, you know, Stockton here, he's been in plays. He memorized the whole plays, you know, so he's got a great brain. But not everybody can remember.
Well, the reality is, I think maybe it'll stop me from getting Alzheimer's or something if I keep my mind going. So that's what I'm hoping for.
Nice. Now, your jokes, it's funny. You're 85, but a lot of your jokes talk about your mom and a retirement center that she was in.
Yeah.
And are those received well? Because I think a lot of us can relate, right?
You know, I just not long ago did a birthday party for an 80-year-old.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And, I mean, old people love my jokes because they relate to me.
Yeah.
Like, for instance, I say, I don't have wrinkles. I'm just one big wrinkle.
One big wrinkle.
If I didn't want wrinkles, I should have kept my body fat.
That's right. Push those wrinkles out. Yeah.
But old people relate to that.
It's true. It's very true. So how long have you been doing this now as far as actually getting up in front of people?
Yeah. I started doing comedy full-time at 82.
82, so 3 years?
Yeah.
Almost 3 years?
Yeah.
Awesome. Have you had some positive and negative experiences? Well, tell us about the negatives first. Have you had a couple of experiences that didn't go like you had hoped?
Well, I remember when I started out, I mean, you have to have a good memory, right? And you have to not be scared. Starting out, I shook so bad, it was horrible. So okay. My husband came with me, and I got up on a stage. My mind went completely blank.
Oh, no.
I mean, serious. And so my husband said in the audience, do you want your notes? Oh, yes. So he brought the notes up.
That's awesome.
I looked at them and realized I had no glasses to read them.
Oh, no.
He said, you want my glasses? He brought the glasses up, I put them on, and they fell on the floor.
Oh, no.
And everyone laughed so you know, hardly thought I'd set the whole thing up.
Yeah, like slapstick, huh? It worked. So it worked. That's awesome. Well, that's weird because you talk about negatives, but that actually became a positive, result. Have you had any other positive experiences in your comedy? I felt like when you did your set in front of, you know, and it was, I mean, it was 100 degrees, the sun was shining,
was
everybody's sitting there sweating, but you made people laugh, and that's what a comedian's ultimate goal is, right?
Yeah, there's nothing more rewarding than seeing people laugh. Get them out of their worlds. I mean, the reality of my family, and you know Kevin, we've always laughed. In fact, he's my inspiration, Kevin, because he can make anyone laugh. Mm-hmm. And so I've been inspired to want to make people laugh, and it's wonderful.
That's cool. Tell us about ICL now, what you do there, and how, if I wanted to take a class, what would I do?
Okay. Institute for Continuing Learning is for older people.
Okay.
I think the age is 55 or 60. Okay. But it's wonderful, and I think a lot of older people don't know about it. I think that we pay, I don't know, $75 for two
semesters. It's not much. I think it was 65 last I checked.
Yeah, like for two semesters. And they have 70 classes. I mean.
And you can take as many as you want.
As many as you want. It's just worth the money, and it's so wonderful. Some of those people that go take all kinds of classes, and that's what keeps you young. It keeps you interested. It's social. You go around other people. I really encourage older people to check out ICL. It's wonderful.
My buddy Gary Sorensen with Morris Columbus Travel teaches classes, and he has PowerPoint slides and pictures of all these incredible places that he's been, and you can learn how to be a stand-up comedian. That's pretty cool. But, I mean, the classes are, I mean, they go from PE type stuff like pickleball or volleyball to, you know, history, whatever it may be.
I know. It's wonderful.
So, great place to go to learn. And this isn't a commercial for ICL, but it kind of is because I feel like it's a good thing. It's a
wonderful.
Positive thing.
Anyone that's kind of bored and not knowing what to do when you're older, get a hold of ICL. It will inspire you. You learn so much. And like I say, you got to have dreams. You got to go for stuff in your life if you want to keep going. You know, and you want to be happy.
I agree, 100%. And what's in the future for you as far as stand-up comedy?
Well, you know, I just want to really get good at comedy and get on some big stages. I've been on a few big stages. I've been in Las Vegas, but mostly I've got an underlying thing. I've written my books to try to help them make a difference in people's lives, and I have them out there. You can order them off in any of the bookstores or whatever. Okay. But I want to get recognized a little bit so that maybe I can be in, you know, having the other way to get my books out to people. So anyway, that's my ulterior motive, to do my comedy, get good at it, and then market my books so I can make a difference in people's lives. So that's kind of my goal, my dream.
And one thing I love too, Eva, is all about clean comedy. There's so many comedians out there who use what they call blue comedy, which is off-color stuff, and there's no reason for that.
Well, you know, I went to Vegas and I got on a stage, and it was horrible. I mean, there were young people in the field that came out of their mouth, and I thought, if I'm going to do this, I've got to find a way to do it, because most of the places are like that. That's why I started my class, but that's it. I've got a couple ladies that do comedy with me, and we're all clean, and we, I don't know. I'm just doing my little bit to help these young people think they don't need to do that bad stuff. They can still be funny.
Absolutely. She's Eva Frey. Eva, thanks for coming on today. It's been fantastic getting to know you. By the way, again, you can find her books, Eva Frey, on Amazon and other book outlets. The book I'm holding in my hand right now, You Must Have a Dream, How to Find Lost Dreams and Get Excited About Life Again. I love it. Thank you, Eva.
Thank you, Andy. Thank you.
Appreciate you sharing your positive spirit with us. It's 9:59 on KDXU. Again, look up that book by Melania, or that letter written by Melania Trump after the assassination attempt. It's good stuff. Thanks for listening. Be back tomorrow.